Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Nick, we have more drama in the Bloodline tonight. The show started with the Bloodline. It ended with the Bloodline, and I don't know how you can blame WWE for that when you have an angle that's as hot as that one. Tonight on the show, Jey Uso gifted a United States Championship match from Paul Heyman and from Roman Reigns in an effort to keep him on their side. Jey, he never really committed one way or the other verbally to whether or not he's still with Heyman and Reigns or he's with Jimmy Uso, but he went through with the title match and ends up losing the match. You could say because of his brother Jimmy getting involved and Solo Sikoa got involved. It was all things Bloodline, but as usual with this angle, Nick, I thought tonight it was another meaningful chapter and another meaningful chapter that was executed really well by all parties. We don't know where Jey Uso stands. He was dismissive of his brother at the end of the show, or with Jimmy Uso at the end of the show. He didn't necessarily stand tall with Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa either. So things still are up in the air, but man, it's compelling. I'm interested to see where it goes, and I thought tonight was another very positive step forward. What did you think of all things Bloodline tonight?
Well, you used the word meaningful. I would use the word important. You know, you're always in danger anytime you have a SmackDown where it's going to be focusing on the Bloodline without actually having Roman Reigns. This time, WWE totally clocked in. And what we had here was a real evolution over the span of 2 hours of not just Jey Uso, although he was the central performer. It was really of everybody involved, all the characters, all of the even peripheral characters of the Bloodline, which includes Sami Zayn and, of course, Paul Heyman, who is a main character, despite what sometimes he might be placed as. You know, this really... everybody involved, whether it was Solo, Jimmy, Jey, and Paul, none of them are in the same place that they started. And that's what made this a really good show. I have to say, I had a total different, you know, anticipation of a prediction of how the show was going to end than it actually did. And that caught me by surprise. It felt like we were moving at an accelerated pace compared to what we're used to for the Bloodline. But you know what? It was good and it was satisfying. I do have my reservations, though, and I'm excited to talk to you about them, Zach, because, you know, as good of a show as this was and as strong of a movement forward, I think someone and a key member took a major step back this week.
A key member of the Bloodline?
Yes, I do. If you want me to get into it, I'll get right into it. Listen, I have been the biggest proponent of Jey Uso for many years now. I think that time will treat me very kindly in that, you know, I was in many ways the first one saying, no, it's all going to go back to Jey. It has to go back to Jey. It should go back to Jey. Jey did not carry himself the way I think he needed to tonight. I think there is a certain, you know, when he was the primary initial competitor against Roman Reigns, he learned to carry himself with a certain swagger that I think he lost a step with, you know, over the course of reverting back to the tag team. When I saw him come out tonight, I did not see that main event Jey Uso. I do think that Jey Uso's got a bigger spotlight on him than he has in a couple years, rightfully so. I still think that he is the rightful heir to the Roman Reigns throne, whether he wins the title or not. He should be a major babyface act for WWE for years and years to come. But there is a part where he needs to revert back to that main event, Jey Uso. He needs to be a little bit more compelling. He has shaved back a little bit of his drama acting. His best segment tonight was backstage with Paul Heyman, I will say that. But just in general, there's a certain cadence about him in the ring that was lacking. And I do think it's something that he needs to dramatically work on if he's going to have more main stage opportunities.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And I would actually like kind of, you know, peel the onion here on that. You know, As I said, I think this story is really compelling. And I thought tonight was a good night for it. Like I'm certainly not hedging on that. But you know, we are, you know, you see a lot of Jey Uso, within this story, like being kind of the middleman and the guy who's unsure about, you know, what he wants. Does he want this? Does he want that? Does he want Sami Zayn? Does he want the bloodline? And, you know, a lot of the story, you know, with him especially, has revolved around those decisions. And, you know, it's tough to say that that's happening right now, because I did think it was a good angle tonight. But I wonder if some of what you're seeing is just the need of that definitive character to show himself with like a constitution at some point where it, you know, you can't, you know, at some point you got to decide, you got to stick with it, and you got to, you know, live with the decision that you make and be, you know, and be that top character. I thought that tonight too, where I'm like, man, they're doing it, you know, because at the end of the show, it's like, we didn't get him standing on either side. And it's like, okay, we're here again. We'll get more of that story next week. And that is the story here. I mean, that's what they're telling chapter by chapter. But you're right, though, that if Jey Uso is going to be like in the conversation at the end of this to, you know, dethrone Roman Reigns or to be, you know, a top tier babyface for WWE when this story is over, you know, I think you want to have him show his true colors. Like, will the real Jey Uso stand up at some point? And I don't think they're like, this is like a foregone conclusion that it's a done deal. He can't get there because of the story and because it's night. But I think at some point you do want to paint the picture of like, no, this is what Jay's all about, and he's going to go fight for it now. And the audience, you know, has permission to fully get behind him because the writing and the story is not going to pull the rug right out from under him. I'm rambling here, but take that and go with it.
Yeah. Well, no, you're on to something in there, Zach. And what it is that this might have been a uniquely quiet crowd. I mean, they had their moments, but this wasn't exactly, you know, setting the world on fire. We weren't back in Puerto Rico tonight. With that said, you know, I would argue that there might be a case there that Jey Uso has been turned too many times, that people have been let down by him too many times. This was not an electric crowd for him. He got positive reactions, but he wasn't the pop of the night, I would argue. That came in other segments. You know, I wonder if people have had their heart broken too much by Jey Uso. And let me also just say this. I am talking about a differential between the character and the man in terms of the confidence. There is, yes, of course, his character is supposed to be playing the uncertainty. But with Jey Uso, he's always been a little bit more fragile on the microphone, like at risk of losing his place a little. He's got more tells than someone, say, like Roman Reigns does when he's lost his spot. You know, Jey will kind of start like repeating certain words and like lean in. Yeah. You still alive over there, Zach?
I'm here. Yeah. I'm here. Drop the thing.
So, yeah, put your ice cream down when I talk, and please. There is something about him that seems like, oh, okay, we're getting back to that main event level. And I think what we've seen about Jey Uso in the past is he can get there, and he can get there quickly. He needs meaty content to work with. And, you know, he's great. We've seen him be excellent when he's against the top tier, against a Roman Reigns, even against a Sami Zayn. Put him on screen as the backbone of an emotional acting for a segment against someone who's less experienced, like a Solo Sikoa, who is but still quite good, you know. And maybe he's just not going to be, you know, quite at the highest level of his performance. That's all nitpicking, though. Let me also just back up and say the Bloodline storyline now, even all the way in June of 2023, still the program worth talking about and salivating over. And still getting excited over. And for that, I'm glad Jey Uso is getting his shot again, because he truly is, I think, the next best babyface of WWE. And yes, I do know Cody Rhodes exists.
No, I think it's a good point. And, you know, it speaks to like just how good Roman Reigns has been in all this too. You know, when you know, he pulls some really strong performances out of everybody he's around, that's around him, including Jay and Jimmy and everybody else. But yeah, I think it's fair to kind of call that out and have it be something to watch moving forward as he takes center stage alongside Roman Reigns in this story. Let me ask you, Nick. So at the end of the show, we have Jay pushed away Jimmy, clearly frustrated that Jimmy kind of essentially cost him the match, though I think when Jay watches that back, he's going to be more definitive in that it was an accident. But I don't know that it really matters within the cadence of the story, just because, you know, should Jimmy have been in there at all? I think you can make that argument. But he also is not standing with, you know, Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa either. So what's next for Jay in this? I mean, is it some kind of showdown with Roman Reigns or face-to-face next week to talk things through? Like, I'm trying to dissect here what's going to happen next week. And, like, I'm curious as to where you think this goes in the short term.
Right. Well, the part about it where, like, when Jay just pushes away his brother Jimmy, you know, he should, as a character, be smart enough to know, like, well, he didn't get kicked in the face on purpose. Like, that's not a thing. Which kind of makes me struggle with Jey Uso's character not actually having much of a constitution. Like, who is he then loyal to? Because it's been pretty clear he's been pretty loyal to his brother Jimmy now for the better stretch of this entire thing. What I have often and always put up as the what I believe the best approach to Jey Uso is using Sting in the Crow era of the NWO storyline as the inspiration for what I believe Jey Uso should be. Jey Uso should be a lone wolf. All of this tug and pull should result in him being like, you know what? I don't want any of you. Do you remember, Zach, were you a 90210 watcher? You know I'm always one to pull out an early 90s reference. Well, let me tell you, there was a famous storyline out there, and it was Kelly Taylor was her name, and she was stuck between Brandon Walsh and Dylan McKay, and they were jockeying for an entire season. And I think in the season finale, they asked her, well, who do you pick? And she says, I pick me, and she walks off into the sunset on her own. That's what Jey Uso should be doing. Jey Uso should be, if he is going to be the main event, should say, I'm going it all the way alone. And, you know, he may not be hiding in the rafters like Sting, you know, was doing back in that day. He's hiding a little bit more in plain sight or just being the vigilante a little bit more, you know, out front. But I do believe he needs to go it alone. And I do believe they can make a great babyface run as long as he is separated. You know, having him be his brother's brother will always make him someone's brother.
You know, did not have 90210 comparison on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show bingo card today, Nick. So well played, my friend. Well played.
Thank you very much. Listen, you bring me back, you get the spice.
There we go. Good. All right, let's pause right here and set the table for the show, and then we'll open up the phone lines and start taking some calls and start answering some emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show for Friday, June 9th, 2023, covering WWE SmackDown on Fox. I'm not Wade Keller. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorf, filling in for Wade tonight. Wade will have a Wade Keller hotline later on with his thoughts and analysis on tonight's SmackDown show, and that'll be up for VIP members. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP for that show, which Wade puts out every single day, and a host of other various podcasts covering all sorts of different topics in pro wrestling, New Japan, Impact Wrestling, and so on and so forth. You also get an ad-free version of this show, an ad-free version of the website, and access to the full PW Torch archives for 30-plus years now. So give us a shot with Forbidden Door and with Money in the Bank and SummerSlam and so many other wrestling events coming up. Now's the time to do it, pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you hear tonight is Nick Barbatti from the PW Torch Daily Cast. Nick, it's been a while, but super pumped to have you on the show, man, and we have a lot to talk about.
Zach, we haven't been on the call together in a year and a half, over a year and a half. Do you believe that?
Are you kidding? No, I cannot believe that.
October 29th, 2021, that was the last time we had our little showdown here. But you know what? They brought me back. here we are together. We've you know, I don't know if you heard a couple, like, was it a month ago or whatever? I had to do a run-in on this call because people were talking and using my name in, you know, all kinds of ways, and they had to get a special surprise visit from me to put everyone in check. But I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here with you. We've always had a great show, and it was a good show to talk about.
It was, and yeah, I mean, you know, people should know by now that, like, if your name's in their mouth, like, you know, you're not gonna stand for that. And Nick's not gonna stand for that. We know this.
No, if you're gonna use my name, send me a check. Thank you. I think Tom owes me money now that I think about that.
Oh my. Oh yeah. Tom, if you're out there listening, pony up.
Yeah, he's not. Spoiler alert.
All right. We will open up the phone lines here. So if you want to call in and talk about the show, you can. 347-215-8558 is the number to do that. It's 347-215-8558. If you do call in and you want to get on the show, press 1 so that you can kind of raise your hand on the switchboard here, and I know that you're ready to talk. If you don't want to give us a call but you still want to participate, you can do that as well. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com is our email address, so you can send us an email, and we'll read it here live on the show, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Before we get to a caller here, I want to just run one quick note by you, and it's more of a full kind of show thought than it is something segment by segment. But I thought this week's SmackDown was like a show that was well put together. I thought it flowed nice. I thought the matches that they had on it all, for the most part, you know, mattered in some capacity, whether it was just, you know, Money in the Bank qualifier that, okay, maybe you knew who was going to win, maybe you didn't, or maybe like all signals pointed one direction. Either way, the match had some sort of, you know, implication. And then it was anchored, you know, by two Bloodline segments. You had the middle part of the show with Asuka and Charlotte Flair returning. And you had two big matches set up for two future weeks, which they announced this week as well, in the tag team unification match in the women's division, and Charlotte versus Asuka for the WWE Women's Championship. So, you know, I add all that up and then go, okay, that was only 2 hours. It's like they put a lot in this show, but it flowed nice. It didn't feel overpacked. I thought everything breathed really well. And it was an enjoyable experience overall. And I don't know, it stood out to me tonight. And what did you think about the pace and just the overall kind of, you know, strategy of the show?
Yeah, it was a well-done show. And, you know, it felt like there was an intentional effort to get more people on the show. You know, SmackDown follows a pretty, you know, there's a format to it, is what I'm trying to say, of that, you know, usually the one really, really long segment, and then, you know, that takes up the first half hour when the, you know, other, you know, elements of it all come together. And then all of a sudden we're off to the mad dash for the next hour with a big segment at the hour mark. And then the whole last segment kind of has a lot of different commercials. This one felt different, and I agree with you. You know, in many ways it felt like a combination of like a really big show with a old WWF superstar smashed in between, because some of the segments did seem to be like major come downs, but nothing in an offensive kind of route. But when you're having Shotzi at this point on the same show where you're, you know, having Charlotte Flair return and then a Bloodline segment, you know, there's real ebbs and flows in there. And we were at some ebbs. With that said, I think it felt like a bit of a new day. It felt like, you know, what, like, almost like the first show post-draft should have been, which would be like something that is exciting, things that are moving very, very quickly. And, you know, I even thought that how the show began without the long entrance of, you know, Paul Heyman and Solo Sikoa felt like, okay, we're trimming some of things for time right now because we want to get things off right in a big way. So from a pacing perspective, it was good. Where I do think there are times with the Bloodline storyline when they want things to advance quickly, it is in such stark contrast to the rest of the storytelling with it, which has been so, you know, labored, that sometimes it just feels like, oh, we're trying to move even quicker than we should towards something. There are moments of that here, but in general, I think that that kind of rolled back for me by not having Jey Uso win the championship. I think if he was announced for the shot and won the championship tonight, I would have felt like, oh, we're moving a little too quickly right now. Or yeah, there's some concern about Theory in there. But this one ultimately felt like, you know, we ended up in a pretty good place.
Yeah, and I think it stood out to me, too, that you have, you know, the company on this show in particular, because it's been as hot as it's been, you know, they announced tonight essentially like three kind of quote-unquote main events, three key reasons why you will want to turn into the show. Roman Reigns next week, the unification match the week after that, Charlotte versus Asuka, Women's World Championship after that. I mean, that's telling. I mean, that's not typically, like, every so often you'll find, you know, WWE or you know, you can look in, even in the recent past, and you can find like little hints of that type of booking and that type of foresight into, you know, big matches. But like on one show dropping three like that 3 weeks in a row, I mean, I think that's a telling strategy and shows, you know, a confidence in the booking and a confidence in their what they have creatively.
Zach,
so that'll be interesting to watch to see how far that picks up. Go ahead.
Zach, there is not a single human being on this, not even the parents of these individuals, that is tuning in 2 weeks to watch that unification match. I mean, come on.
What's 2 weeks for about?
The unification match for the women's tag team matches. Oh, come on. That segment, I mean, I just thought, like, it was that was an embarrassment. It's bad. It's really,
really
bad.
Okay, we're going to – we need to get to this because I was higher on – I was certainly higher higher on it.
I don't think there's been worse acting, worse in-ring action, if we're going to call it that. No, embarrassing. An absolute embarrassment. An embarrassment to the legacy of Ronda Rousey. And I am not a Ronda Rousey hater. But everything about this, I mean, honestly, someone should pull the plug on this today, pretend like we never had it, and then just get rid of both championships and pretend like they never existed. That's what I really think.
Oh, man. That is cold. That is cold. We're going to get back to this for sure, because I am certainly higher on it than you, and I'm going to prove it to you, Nick. So
okay.
There. Let's first go to our VIP Express line here, and we will go to Chris in Oklahoma. Chris, thanks so much for waiting. Thanks so much for calling the show tonight. It's always good to hear from you, man. What did you think of SmackDown?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I was thinking beforehand, if they wanted to go the route and wanted Jay to stay with Roman for a while, and the only way Jimmy could get it through, you know, through them is to get the tag team champions help, you know, have their help, because that's the only way he can help get through them. Do you think that could be a possible idea, or do you think it's been done? Okay, maybe we need to split them up. Maybe we don't. I mean, there's so many possibilities to go with this. It just makes me wonder if they have, like you said, turned him too many times, and maybe it'll keep him a heel for a while, you know, just because, you know, they think that maybe Jimmy is the better face than Jay, you know, because he's been a heel so many times. So long.
I mean, I don't think that's, I mean, I think that that's what they want you to think. I think that's what they want,
mm-hmm.
you know, the story to be right now is that uncertainty from Jay. But I think all roads end here or lead to Jay finally at some point definitively like putting his allegiance on the side of Jimmy and going up against Roman Reigns again. I mean, I think that's what,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what you're building towards here. And I think that, like, you know, I think you can talk about, okay, are they turning Jey Uso too many times? I think that, yes, you can kind of start analyzing that. But Nick, I don't know about you, but I'm not willing. I don't want to go out and say that quite yet, because we don't know what this next chapter is going to look
yeah.
like. It is something to watch, but I still think it's effective what he's doing, and effective in moving this storyline forward. But no, I don't get the sense that this is a pivot from Jay, Chris. Nick, how about you?
Yeah, correct. This is not a pivot to Jimmy. That's not happening. My caution about the turning too much was just as it related to audience reaction. We are always going to end at a point where Roman Reigns is standing opposite Jay. That's not going to shift. And by the way, I outlined earlier my preference for what they do for the Jey Uso. What I actually think is going to happen, though, with his character is that Roman is going to injure Jimmy, and then that is when Jey is just going to snap. And you almost need Jimmy sidelined a little for it to return back to the start, which would be Jey versus Roman. Jey will always be able to get cheered in that moment. Why? Because he is literally not Roman Reigns. Apart from that, he's, incredibly likable and has a ton of physical charisma with his acting. So he is going to be set and just fine. My worry that this just fresh out of the gate moment today, I don't think it was so much of a sprint. I thought it was a fine trot if he were a horse in this race. But I think in general, we are going to get there. I think it was kind of just, it was just a red herring to have Jimmy be the one that pie-faced Roman last week. I think that was, as viewers, you were supposed to have that moment. You're like, whoa, that was supposed to be Jey that did that. And if not Jey, Sami Zayn before him. But that's all setting up for Jey's big reveal to be a big face reveal. I just do think, that they have teased it a bit too much. And that's just my opinion. And I think that's where we are right now with them.
Yeah, very good. Chris, back to you.
Well, the other thing, I'm trying to think, there was one other thing I was going to ask you about tonight. Okay, the championship with Asuka, they mentioned it was the women's championship, but they didn't mention SmackDown by name. Does that mean that a undisputed women's championship, or how are they going to do that?
No, it sounds to me like they're going to be calling what is the belt that's on SmackDown that is Asuka's belt, the WWE Women's Championship, and the one that's going to be on Raw, which is, I guess, currently the SmackDown Championship, will be the World Women's Championship. Would you agree, Zach?
Yes, I would. I mean, or like the, WWE Universal Women's Championship. So something to differentiate them, but to not make them – they're not going to be brand specific by name anymore.
No,
they're going to be
no.
like the men's titles.
Zach, I would actually go one step further. If they were going to make any one of them the Universal, it would have been the one that Asuka has, because that's on literally the same show as Roman. I think this is a long-term play that we're going to actually fade out the Universal title name when Roman loses that title. And I think you're going to have a WWE championship and a world championship. I think that will be mirrored on the women. So I think that is the long-term play.
The more things change, the more they stay the same. It's like we're back 10 years ago with those championship names. And it's probably the better way to go. But yeah, I mean, I think ultimately tonight was the first step in, all right, these brand-specific named world titles, gone. They're gone, and we'll see what Rhea Ripley's is maybe on Monday. I don't know. What else, Chris?
Honestly, that's all I really have, and I thank y'all, and have a great night.
Yeah, thanks for making the call, man. Always good to talk to you. Have a good weekend. All right, let's check the old switchboard here. Let's go to 914 next. 914, you are up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, Zach and Nick, it's Brad in Florida. How are you guys?
Brad, my guy.
I know, man.
What's
it's
up, man?
Nice
What's
to speak with
show?
You both. Hey, guys, I thought like you guys, I thought it actually reminded me of this time where I was watching Melrose Place, where Jake I'm just kidding. But your 90210 analogy was actually really astute, Nick, and I agree with you. That's the way Jey should probably go. He should just go his own way, and I think it would really work, and I think that would really put him over big time. But You know, I was a little confused, and I was, Chris, you know, stole a little bit of my thunder with the belt thing. I was going to ask you guys, like, why is that the WWE Women's Championship? But on the same note, like, do you guys feel like it looked very similar to Roman's belt, his new belt, without just with a white strap instead of a black strap? I mean, the aesthetics of it to me, like, I was really surprised it was essentially the same belt. Like, I thought, you know, it would be a little bit more like maybe like Seth's championship, like something a little bit of with a little bit of a different look. Were you guys at all surprised about that?
No, I think it's.
I
think what you're going to see is both belts on the women's division mirror the respective shows, the men's belts, I guess you could say. I was surprised that it had the gold foil attached to it because I felt like one of the things, Zach, I'm curious to hear what you think about this, because for me, when people were like complaining about the Roman Reigns belt recently, I thought, well, it's ridiculous. Why would you want him to have a belt that doesn't look like the belt that he won? You know, like that's supposed to be the bookend moment, is the first belt that he had was the blue one, and then he got the black one, and then he ends like with the gold one, him losing that one. And they're all supposed to look the same to me. I think that that just fits. It just really kind of wraps it all up in a bow. With the women's belt with Asuka, like the gold to me should signify, you know, an exceptional moment, like in this case, the 1,000 days. And so for me, that was reductive to put the gold on there. And by the way, the gold does not look bad, despite what everyone wants to say about it. But I also just don't think it necessarily fit this moment. I would have preferred that they went just a different approach.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree on the belt, first of all. Like, I totally felt like a logical-looking belt for Roman Reigns and for the WWE. I mean, I think you're right about kind of like Roman being the guy to have the gold because it's 1,000 days. You know, that certainly would make sense. I mean, but I think they just reverted to, you know, we want some uniformity here. Like a la UFC or even NXT. Yeah, they've got almost exact titles just with the leather being different color for the men and women. So it's, you know, I think with belts, the like fans and the audience, you know, there's a lot of, I like this belt, I don't like that belt. But for WWE, the company, I mean, it's a branding play. I mean, that's why the WWE logo is so big on this, the titles tonight. It's why it's front and center on the new Seth title. Like, it's there for a reason. It's going to be. And I think all four belts, even if the new one on Monday kind of is like a mirror image of Seth's belt, I think all will look sharp and that's the key. So yeah, no, I wasn't really surprised by that. Brad, it didn't throw me for a loop. Do you like the belt?
Yeah.
Brad?
Yeah, and it's not like I like Roman's new belt a lot. I think it's great. And, you know, this belt, I just thought it should have had some SmackDown tinge to it, or I don't even know if that's the right word, but it had like a red, from what I kind of saw briefly, it kind of had like the red swoosh instead of the blue swoosh. I think it should have had some sort of, you know, branding to it, that this is a SmackDown championship and maybe Rhea's has a similar design with a red. I don't know. But regardless, you guys were talking about the tag team unification match with the women. We brought up this Isla Dawn and Kaylee Ray. I forget, Alba Fire. Do you find Isla Dawn's, like, affect in the ring to be extraordinarily annoying, or am I, like, just seeing something? Because she's constantly just muttering to herself and making these like, oh, faces and like really weird, like affected faces at all times that are so bizarre. And it's not even like, oh, wow, this is like a kooky character. It just seems weird. Like it just doesn't seem natural. It seems very bizarre to me. Did you guys find that annoying, or am I just looking too deeply into it? I know this really doesn't matter much, but I'm just curious.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say that Nick did find it annoying. That's just, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that based on your earlier comments, Nick. So for me, it's not, I don't see that as annoying. I just see it as unpolished work, unpolished character work, unpolished mic work. And I'm not going to sit here and make the argument that that's good for, you know, for national television. And so I could totally sympathize with why you guys were like, hey, that's annoying. Get that off my TV. This stuff isn't good. When I was watching this, I took just, I guess, a different approach in watching it. What I saw was, you know, an investment being made, you know, a true investment being made in the women's division and the tag division in a long, long time. I mean, those titles have been absolutely worthless and just toy trinkets for so long in the company. And even for the last handful of weeks and months with them around the waist of Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, it still kind of felt that way, although it felt like they were maybe trying to, like, turn the tide a bit. And tonight, you know, for better or worse, and I totally sympathize with the argument of, well, it was for worse, the division and the titles and the forthcoming announcement of a big championship match weeks out, like, that shows some investment. It was getting the time to become something. And, you know, I think sometimes I'm a big proponent of, you have to just sometimes, like, feed the thing that you want to have momentum so that it can have momentum. And yes, it's going to be a little bit rocky. It certainly could be that. With Ronda Rousey, it usually always is when she picks up a microphone. But the fact that you had two women's tag teams in the ring setting up a match, you know, it wasn't, you know, anything like overly produced. And it seemed more like a straight up challenge. Like, I like that. I like that it got that kind of focus and the kind of follow-up that came along with it. So, you know, Isla Dawn has a ways to go. You know, she needs to work on that character. And I think, you know, her and Alba Fire have got to kind of polish up the gimmick and figure out, like, okay, are we going to go full on with this kind of creepy kind of fire stuff, or are we going to kind of shed most of it because it's just not working? They need to figure that out. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler, I think they come across as they're like cohesive in their kind of their mannerisms back and forth. But even them, they're choppy, and Ronda Rousey likely will be. But all things considered, you know, it was a thumbs up for kind of just the attempt here. And I think sometimes you just have to go with things to try to make them what you want in professional wrestling and book them the way you want it to go and see if they sink or swim. And, you know, they've got a big match coming up. They've got to deliver there better than they did tonight, but, you know, they're on the table now. And I think that's what stood out to me most here. Nick.
Oh, for the love of God, Zach.
Come on, man.
I'm not going to – you came on for a very long time. I'm going to come on now. Dawn and Fire were the epitome of JV to varsity, except for they're not working with a varsity team in Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey. I mean, we want to talk about the overacting and odd cadence of the ring. Yes, you're right about that. That was not main stage ready. And if it was main stage ready, this is not how you do it. This is absolutely not a further emphasis on the women's tag team division. This is a way of getting rid of one pair of belts that they don't know how to deal with for another pair of belts that they don't know how to deal with. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler are a problem. They are not enjoyable to watch. And there's absolutely, you used the word, they were cohesive. There's nothing cohesive about them, except for the fact when they walk in a quick pace to the ring. Everything else about them reads awkward. And no matter what they do in that ring when they're speaking, the only thing that beams from the television is, this is awkward. This is awkward. It is an uncomfortable cadence. They should not be having the microphones at this point. And the fact that they were in this position means nobody cares enough to stop it from happening. What they actually needed, Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey, was a showcase match against a great tag team. Whether that was they could have made up a combination or just had them in there for a real spotlight match against Bayley and Io Sky and say, here, go 20 minutes. We know you're both heels. Figure it out, but get a great match so that these title belts can actually have been defended in an awesome match that people say, but yes, see, that's what this can be. What we saw in here today was a way of saying we don't want to waste what we're paying on Ronda Rousey by not having her on the screen, but by putting her in here with these other cast around her that can't hold up their own. I mean, this was by far the worst segment of any wrestling show, I think, that we've seen in a quite a while. You know, when you think of some of the really bad acting performances of movies in the past, you at least have them surrounded by really quality performers. There was not one single quality actor in that whole ring. That's what I think.
We're talking about two different things here, though. I mean,
no, we're not.
We definitely are, because look, you have a Women's World Tag Team Championship unification match that is booked 2 weeks out that's going to get promotion on next week's show for sure. And, like, you can't make the argument that, oh, this is not those titles and that tag team getting the light shined on them. It absolutely is. Now, that's a separate argument from, okay, whether or not this was good or not. I'll buy that. But the women's tag titles haven't got any sort of light like this for months and months and months and months. And I think the fact that the belts are around the waist of Ronda Rousey, who has, like, obviously some clear name recognition, although it's not what it was 4 years ago, there's a credibility that she can bring to it. And look, and her segments were always awkward. I mean, like, even when she was working with Becky Lynch, like one of the biggest women stars that the company's ever had, Ronda was still awkward, and she was working with one of the best at that time. So, I mean, I don't think you can take the awkwardness and go, okay, this is like complete garbage, because it's part of the Ronda Rousey package. I mean, like, it mm-hmm. and it always has been, and it always will. But there's an element too of you just don't know how it's going to come off that I think that can be compelling in the right circumstances. And again, I want to reiterate, I'm not sitting here saying that, hey, this was the greatest, you know, segment on the show, or that even was a good segment on the show. I liked the attention that the titles got, and that
right.
was a low bar to clear. But I don't think you can say, like, oh, this is them just kind of punting the women's tag team division. I hard disagree on that.
Well, that's fine. You're allowed. I think what you're saying is that, you know, so there's a coded message on when something is announced weeks in advance, that it is supposed to be seen as important. And sure, if you're going to take that as a win, that's fine. I viewed it a little bit in the opposite direction, though. I viewed it as someone, if they get a job that they're not qualified for and they have an announced starting date in 2 weeks, but you know that this person is going to fail in the interim based on how everything, all the deck is set around them, is this really worth celebrating, or should that person be, you know, getting their resume further ready for the next job? That's where I'm at.
I think, well, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, like, you mean, again, when you do something like this, like, to me, it comes with the responsibility to make it really good. And so, you know, next week they got a hit on some sort of promotion and some sort of hype. You know, the following, they got a hit with the match. So, I mean, like, quick positive, you know, take on this is not in a vacuum. I mean, it has to come with good work that follows it. I think, you know, we'll definitely see that to come. I mean, Nick, do you, like, is there a chance for that type of gimmick on SmackDown in the women's division? Like, kind of like the sorcery, you know, I don't want to say Undertaker, but Undertaker-like type tone. I mean, it's really hard to pull off. I think they need to peel that back. If they're going to be a tag team on Raw, they both can work in the ring, they both can have good matches, but I think that you either have to go one way or the other. You got to be all in on it, or, you know, you really have to kind of, I think, shed it at this point. And I'm on the ladder in terms of what I think will make them bigger stars. I mean, did you see a lot of them in NXT?
I didn't. I'm not really that familiar to them. But I will say this. I think that if we're going to stick to going back to 90s TV shows that starred Shannon Doherty, there's always a...
Don't do it. Don't do it.
There's always an audience for a Charmed you know, women in particular being drawn to that type of character. So if from what on the loose basis that I know of it, like, yeah, is there going to be – is some witchy sorcery kind of thing appealing? Honestly, maybe to a certain degree. Really, that might be a thing, but I'm going to tell you that right now, it did nothing for me. And maybe I'm not the audience that they're appealing for, but it just I don't know. I think that there is just so much to be embarrassed about in that segment. I thought it was an embarrassing segment to watch.
Brad, back to you, my friend.
Yeah.
You said a lot. Any comments there or a different topic? Go ahead, either way.
No, thank you, guys. I just found Isla Dawn's faces to be the weirdest and just so unbelievably annoying. You know, the other thing is, and I know it's just previews for what's coming up on Raw, but they showed a really great Money in the Bank qualifying match, which is going to be Damian Priest versus Riddle. And I would imagine Damian Priest will probably win, but, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Damian, but... Then you see, and Cody Rhodes versus The Miz. Now, I love The Miz, but like if I'm, I feel like it makes Cody Rhodes look like what are you doing, man? Like, you're not trying to get in this Money in the Bank. Like, you're busy with The Miz. Like, that's what you're up to. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like it was just kind of stupid seeing that in the previews. And the other thing that I want to ask about really quick was with Bayley winning and then Io winning. When Bayley was in the ring with her at the end after Io had won her match, and you would think there would be this moment of, wow, you're in the Money in the Bank too, and then maybe a little bit of, like, skepticism towards another, or sort of like a, maybe not a, you know, beating each other up, but like sort of like some acknowledgement of that. But there was absolutely none, which really kind of surprised me. Do you think that they're kind of taking the angle of, oh, these two are going to go at it together and try to, you know, whichever wins, it's good if the family wins, sort of thing, you know, if my brother wins the lottery, if I win the lottery, if my wife wins the lottery, it's just as good, like that sort of angle? Or do you think like that was just something that they missed an opportunity on? And I'd love to hear what you guys have to say on that. I don't think it was super important, but it was just something I was kind of like expecting and just didn't happen. Like, Bayley was just raising her hand like, oh, she won. Look at EO. Ha ha. You lost. And that was it. And I was expecting more.
Nick, what do you think?
Well, it's because they're prepping for Io Sky to win and then Bayley have a problem with it. So you're one beat ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's almost like a red herring a bit, like, so that it's even more surprising later, but so that they can tell the story. Like, I think Io is in a good position here, given what you noticed there. I think it stands out that she's kind of, you know, going to be at least at the top of the conversation to win. And then you have like a ready-made, you know, feud ready to go with Bayley. Nick, the prospects of Io Sky kind of winning Money in the Bank and elevating herself, you know, in WWE on the main roster, you know, because of that, how much do you think SmackDown needs it? And what do you think her ceiling is? On the brand.
Yeah, I think they definitely need it. I think, you know, even the prospect of Charlotte coming back, you know, I'm a diehard Charlotte fan. You know, there's nothing brand new feeling about it. I think there's also, even when you were seeing Bianca Belair on screen, you know, it's the obvious anticipation that she's going to be turning heel soon. And honestly, I just found her kind of annoying. And I guess I was supposed to. Like, there's a part where she becomes the dethroned champion who isn't being treated with respect that you sympathize for. And then it shifts to stop complaining. And I think that as viewers, we're being taken on that little bit of journey where you're like, you're supposed to be getting mildly frustrated with her. But with that said, there's still Charlotte Flair is not some great baby face. No matter how many times she takes a break and comes back and gets that superstar re-welcome, people tire of that real fast, mostly because she is such a natural heel. So there's a dire need for a proper baby face. And Io Sky is indeed that person. She wrestles like a baby face. The match at Backlash showed she would be a really fantastic baby face if given the opportunity to. I worry about her inability to really have an effective promo that would connect with American audiences by and large. But I don't think that's necessarily preventative of her having that moment. But they need her as much as she needs them right now for that moment. And she's going to get it. I mean, I would say by SummerSlam, I think she should do the honorable thing, if assuming she wins Money in the Bank, which I think is glaringly obvious that she will. She should pre-announce her match and announce it for SummerSlam and win the championship there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, I mean, I think she's got a good potential. I mean, yeah, the promo is a thing, and we'll have to see how WWE works through that. But if you've watched her work in NXT, you know, she has such like a strong babyface moveset, and she has, you know, just a Daniel Bryan-like connection with the crowd. Not on that level with or that type of passion, but just she plays that kind of underdog, sympathetic babyface really, really well, and then has kind of the high-flying, exciting moveset to go along with it. And it's a good combination when she's put in the right position. So I think that the show could really use a fresh face like that. When we've seen Bianca and Charlotte, we've seen, you know, Charlotte and Bayley, and, you know, we've seen a lot of those combinations, and I think, you know, it's going to be a really kind of a fresh kind of toy for WWE to play with on the game board. Brad, back to you, man. What else for us tonight?
The only other thing is I think it's pretty predictable. I want to see what you guys thought that Bianca, you know, obviously with Charlotte saying, oh, I am the line, like, what do you mean get to the front of the line after Bianca had thought she was the front of the line? In her promo with Pierce, I'm pretty sure that, you know, they're not going to allow Asuka to lose the belt that quickly the Friday before Money in the Bank when they announced the Charlotte match. So I would imagine that Bianca will probably cost Charlotte that match in some way, and that might be her heel turn. I don't know what you guys think of that, but I'll let you guys discuss it. And Zach, great to speak with you. And Nick, my man, always great to hear your voice. I can't wait for your show tomorrow. And love everything you guys have to say, and I'm going to be listening the whole rest of the show. Thank you both so much.
Oh, thank you, man.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend, and thanks for calling in. Appreciate you. So let's take the time here talking about Charlotte and about the women's division to talk like a little bit more in depth about, you know, the Charlotte return here. I mean, she kind of, as you mentioned, Nick, like we've seen these moments before. She kind of comes in, big star reaction. That is clockwork at this point, and she deserves that. She's a really big star. We've just not seen like the babyface Charlotte Flair work consistently over a long period of time. She is such a natural heel, and she's such a good one. But tonight, you know, she's opposite heel Asuka, so I think for the time being, anyway, they're gonna stick with her as babyface. I thought, you know, she had a decent night tonight out there. I mean, Charlotte is always going to come across, I think, kind of really rough around the edges, intense, to the point, almost, you know, like confident, but bordering on the line of arrogant. And I thought she walked right up to that line, like on the show with the promo. This is, you know, I made the line and all that. But that said, I think she didn't cross it on this occasion. And I thought she, you know, stayed, you know, well enough in the babyface space where she just looked like badass that's out there challenging Asuka because she's the best and she's going to cut the line like whenever she wants because she's the best. Like, I'm okay with that, but man, she's got to watch it because she really, really walks up to that edge sometimes and crosses it a lot of the time too. What'd you think of Charlotte?
Yeah, I think she had a pretty good night. I think that there's a danger with her when she's in there with someone like Asuka in that, you know, she's literally towering over Asuka and somehow the equilibrium of who's heel, who's babyface, everything gets thrown off a bit. Now, I don't think Charlotte Flair needs to be a proper babyface. I think she just needs to be the respected champion fighter. And I think that for whatever reason, they can't seem to like shake that balance out. Like of everybody who should be a shade of gray, she's the epitome of it because you want people to respect her as the grand champion, but you also understand that she naturally leans with an edge. So they have to kind of figure that out a little bit more. I would say that, you know, when it comes to where she is right now, I don't think she's a threat to winning the championship. I think that this is it's a good spot to be in to elevate the championship you know, continued upward by having it defended against meaningful people. I think one of the biggest disappointments has been Rhea Ripley's defenses, in that she came out of WrestleMania and had no one of quality and substance to defend against. And I think that that's really been damaging to her reign. So over on SmackDown, I think that it is good that there's being an effort made to actually have the highest of quality opponents have been out there one right after another after WrestleMania. Now, I do think also part of Charlotte's really warm welcome was the respect on her name for that big WrestleMania classic. And I think one thing that can be said was that WrestleMania match involving Charlotte Flair was fantastic. And I would argue that the matches involving Asuka and Bianca Belair have not been. So I do think at some point, you know, as an audience, or when we're watching this thing play out, you know, you kind of have to, at some point, my desire for the audience actually would be to just appreciate Charlotte Flair at some point and stop finding ourselves in the position where it's so tempting to boo her that then she's got to work out from underneath to like regain everyone's respect. I just want to be able to enjoy her in a feud and not have that be a thing.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, some of that I think is just her natural heel charisma that just comes out. Like, it's hard, I think, for her to hide that sometimes. Randy Orton was the same way, you know? Like, he just has just an incredible heel charisma that even as a babyface, like, it shines through and can be unlikable at times. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see her navigate this. We saw Bianca Belair backstage kind of angling for a title opportunity. She gets, you know, Charlotte Flair jumps her in line. That is one match that we have not – they haven't gone to that yet. We haven't had the big Bianca Belair versus Charlotte Flair program. Man, I mean, I think Bianca Belair is an act that has cooled off like significantly in the last 12 months. But I have trouble envisioning that working with some sort of ill-fated Bianca Belair heel turn with a babyface Charlotte Flair. And I kind of felt like some of the attitude that Bianca Belair was throwing Adam Pearce was like potentially signaling towards that. And if she does interfere, you know, in the match and cost Charlotte that the match in a couple weeks, it's like we're kind of on the road to that. And Nick, I'm not fully seeing how that plays out successfully at this point in time, given where everybody else is in the women's division on SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, it does make sense that we would be heading there. But I also think I want someone to kind of just flat out say, I don't know what Bianca Belair's problem is. Charlotte Flair didn't get her rematch either. You know, like, it's like, use some common sense in here. Like, and then if that's what, you know, if that level of delusion is what turns Bianca Belair heel, then so be it. But I mean, like, at some point we need to put our thinking caps on here with this. So I know a few years ago everyone was so excited when they got rid of the automatic rematch for a champion, but I actually thought it didn't really make storyline sense to not have the champions who lost the title get a rematch. I thought shouldn't they be deserving that? And I think that, you know, that is kind of like the backbone of the conflict that we have here. I still would say that next time we have Charlotte versus Bianca Belair, it should be on, you know, the biggest stage possible. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if there's going to be a patience there to do that, and how much, you know, how many more speed bumps you can put in place to avoid something like that. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, what you're outlining is correct. I mean, especially if on SmackDown you have Asuka moving towards a proper feud with Io Sky, then you think, looking at the playing board that we have now, you would have to put Flair and Belair in there together.
Yeah. So anything else on the women's division, man, before we kind of pivot topics here and take another call?
No, let's take another call.
Okay. Let's see. Who do we have? All right, 443. I believe this is Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, what's going on, man? Happy Friday. And what do you think of the show?
So I thought today's SmackDown was good. It was, like, a really good episode of SmackDown tonight. I was just thinking more in the women's division here about the – I was wanted to see more talk about the whole Women's Championship the championship itself. I was kind of expecting them to do the same thing similar to Rhea Ripley on Monday, and it looks like that, like this past week, and not possibly next week, because I just assumed that they were going to explain it on Monday first and then on Friday. I think Friday will be the first day they would mention it for. So what do you think about the possibility for Monday for Rhea to, for them to finally have Rhea's new championship belt as well? What do you think? Is that going to happen on Monday? It should, right? So what do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I mean, they have not announced that it will happen on Monday, but it absolutely makes sense that it will, and I think it should. I mean, I think that this is a clear, you know, company, hey, we're going away from these brand-specific titles, and, you know, this is the first step, and I think Monday, Nick, is going to be the next step here. I think that's almost a certainty, although it has not been announced. What do you think, Nick?
You got it. I mean, we didn't have much lead time for this week's announcement with Asuka, so why would we have any more from that for Raw?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Kyle, I think this is a definitive move that way, so I think Monday we'll see it. Go ahead, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the occasion for that. So I think the thing is about the I think as a championship as a whole, it's fine. I'm surprised it's doing the same yellow belt like Roman Reigns. I'm kind of that's interesting. So it's interesting that Seth Rollins, I should say, has a better championship looking belt than Roman Reigns does, and Asuka just following with the yellow background for it. So it's like I think it's fine on the women's championship. I just don't think it looks all that good on the world championship. I guess I don't mind it too much. It's fine. I don't really. What the color of the titles or whatever is fine at this point, but it's just, I think I like it on the women's championship a little bit more. I don't know why. It just seems more like it's appropriate for a woman to hold it like in that respect than Roman Reigns, I guess. But I don't know. It's fine. It's fine. Whatever. The championship belt. I mean, it is what it is. Whatever. But that's just my two cents on the belt. As far as just having. Talking about Charlotte and Bianca earlier, Bianca's potential heel turn. I've been claiming her being a heel for a while now because she's been kind of dead as a babyface ever since her feud with Becky Lynch. She's been dead as a babyface. So this is going to lead to her turning heel. That's a good thing. But then I guess the other problem is that she also shares the same roster as Charlotte, which she is naturally a heel. So I think. So that would be interesting how they're going to play that up, if that's the direction for Bianca to be a heel. So what do you think in that respect, how that's going to work in the coming weeks or so with Charlotte and Bianca on the same brand, if the direction is Bianca a heel at some point? What do you think about that?
Nick, go ahead. You go first.
I mean, I feel like we've already pretty much outlined this very much. I think we're going to be seeing the long storyline of Bianca Belair being, feeling greatly disenfranchised due to the combination of Asuka, Adam Pearce, Charlotte Flair. She's going to snap. And then I think you have the two former champions battling out in their new respective characters, and new-ish for Charlotte, but definitely new for Bianca. I think you're right that we are definitely due for heel Bianca, and I think you got to start her off with someone of importance, and there's no one really that matters more than Charlotte Flair, and I think Charlotte Flair would be on the losing end of that initial battle, and I think from that point on, you can have a heel Bianca Belair against the babyface Io Sky as, you know, a proper feud to take us into the fall. That's really what I think will happen.
Yeah, that's a great match right there, Io Sky versus Bianca Belair. And again, I do think that this is where we're heading. I'm not confident in like a babyface Charlotte Flair being able to pull the heel version of Bianca Belair that I think we'll need to really make that character compelling. And it's just because, again, that just kind of natural greatness that Charlotte has as a heel that she sometimes can't shed, that I think may make Bianca just incredibly likable. But we'll see. We haven't seen Bianca Belair as a heel in a very long time. She has worked heel in NXT. She has shown that she can play that part. And, you know, they need that, I think, on SmackDown right now. I mean, if they're going to go with Charlotte as a babyface and Io Sky is going to be a babyface, you know, you kind of have the top of the division from a babyface perspective locked down. And Bianca has been there for such a long time on Raw, and she's had time on SmackDown too, you know, that you know, she kind of doesn't have a place, I think, on that show as a babyface. And she's too big of a star to just not have on TV on a regular basis. So it's the right thing to do at this point as well, even though I think we don't really know how it will go opposite Charlotte, Kyle. But back to you, man.
Yeah.
Anything
yeah.
else to that?
I was excited too for EO and Bailey both being Money in the Bank. It kind of made sense. EO is my pick to win, if not Becky, but you know, two of my favorite or my top picks to win the briefcase. I've been ever since they announced to be it was going to be EO and Becky in qualifier matches. I was like, even before they even qualified, I just thought they were two of my favorites to win the briefcase before they even qualified. So the fact that they're both officially in the match, I'm expected that to win for them to win. So my question though is that if they plan on doing a EO Asuka feud, my question is then is that involvement promos, because neither of them can speak English. I think that's the other problem. They're great wrestlers. I enjoy EO Sky more than Asuka, honestly, but with them potentially going into promos, if that's a direction for SummerSlam, let's say, how is that going to work in terms of them? Because it's going to be hard to build up this match when neither one of them can speak English, and the majority of the audience who watches the show is from America. All the places they go in is in the United States for the most part. So how you think that dynamic is going to play out if that's the direction they're going with between EO and Asuka? And yeah, so you think about that.
Good question. I mean, I think they really just have to lean into, you know, the natural personalities and like charisma of both of those women. I feel like I've said that word a lot tonight, charisma. But in this case, it plays. Like, no, they're not going to be in there, you know, for a 10-minute promo segment between the two of them. But I think you can lean into what they do well. And I think they both have really strong presences. They both can work in the ring. And so I think you're going to see them in those situations, whether it's kind of, you know, semi-physical encounters in tag matches or six-woman tag matches. I think that's a card you can play. I also think you'll see more of them on shows like the Grayson Waller Effect, for example, where you have somebody there that can carry most of the talking, but you can still feed, you know, the story from a promo perspective, just not with the two of them cutting really, really long promos. But Nick, I think there's absolutely a way to do this effectively, that by the time when they get in the ring and they stand across from each other at SummerSlam or whenever and the bell rings, like you can have that audience, you know, fully in anticipation of the match. And I don't think it has to happen from, you know, big long promo segments. There's other ways you can do this. And it starts with just how good the two of them are from a pro wrestler perspective. But Nick, over to you. What do you think?
Yeah, it's going to be with Bailey as the interpreter in the middle. She's going to go more paired towards Asuka and, you know, carry with it the emotional reaction between her and Io Sky as having been the fallen out friends, but then also be able to be the, you know, proper mouthpiece probably for Asuka. That's what I would anticipate.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, yep, I agree. It's a good use of Bailey. It's kind of a weird use of her, given that how, you know, kind of her status in the company, but I think it's also really, really important for that particular match too. Kyle, thank you. Any final comments?
Yeah, my last thing I wanted to bring up, we could talk about while I'm off here. It's about AJ and Karrion Kross, about this direction they're feuding with each other. They've been teasing that a while back with Kross having the picture of Styles. So I'm intrigued about this match between Styles and Kross in this next tag team match that was in that next week or 2 weeks. There's a lot of matches in the next 2 weeks. So whatever the match happens, even next week or in 2 weeks between that next tag match should be interesting. And what do you thoughts about this feud between Styles and Kross? But that's it.
Kyle, thank you. I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for the call. Have a good weekend.
Yeah.
So we had Karrion Kross attack AJ Styles from behind after Scarlett blew some, I guess, red powder. Or what did they call it, Nick? What did the commentary call it tonight?
Scarlet fever or something? Whatever.
Scarlet fever. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about Karrion Kross at this point. Like, it's, you know, I mean, AJ Styles is AJ Styles. I think he is an important person to have on the show, and I think he's kind of a utility player at this point in time. And as good as he is, I don't think, you know, he's going to pull anything new out of Karrion Kross at this point in time. I mean, it's such a one-note gimmick, and the Scarlet Fever thing was, you know, it was what it was, and it's, you know, we've seen that kind of thing in wrestling for just a lot of years now. But I'm less down on that than I am just that we get more of the same with Karrion Kross, and I think the more we get it, the more that it's just going to land him at the same exact level on the card. And so this, to me, is something to fill out the show on a week-to-week basis, but that's about it. Like, I don't think it has a higher ceiling than that, and I don't think the match is going to be more than, you know, a couple stars, and, you know, it's just going to kind of be a thing that happens on SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, Houdini couldn't pull more from Karrion Kross at this point. And how embarrassing for me that I was the one who a couple of weeks ago was going to bat for AJ Styles to be the one to be the first world champion over on Raw, and look how far we've fallen. I mean, like, is there any greater punishment in WWE at this point than being the next person to feud with Karrion Kross for seemingly months, although you only interact every 3 weeks or so? And then you have Scarlett out there who's, you know, again, to use your word of the night, a lot of charisma, a lot of physical charisma when it comes to her. She's really, you know, an attractive person for the camera. And, you know, Kross just gives nothing. I mean, it's just talk about, like,
really
the is. Person who just gives the bare minimum and expects the maximum in return. I mean, there's just nothing really there. And then, by the way, Meechin or whatever, she does nothing for me. And I don't think AJ Styles had a great match in a very long period of time. So this is just nothing that does anything for me.
Yeah. You know, it's filler. And I suppose you need some of that on your show every so often, but I don't, you know, we're not going to be talking about Karrion Kross versus AJ Styles, like, you know, 2-3 weeks from now. It's just, I just don't think it has, I don't think it has the legs, you know, at all. And a lot of that lands on Kross, but yeah, I mean, AJ's kind of in that place too, where it's like, he's straight up utility guy at this point, and, you know, he's going to work these kind of matches. I think that's just where he is. Let's get to an email here. From Azan. He's got a couple questions for us. He says, "Hey, Zach and Nick, question number one, what do you think about the idea of Money in the Bank being mostly work-rated guys this year outside of LA Knight?" Interesting question. We had Santos Escobar qualify tonight. Who else? Do we have anybody else in the men's division qualify for that match?
Butch.
No. Oh, and Butch. And Butch as well. So what do you think, Nick?
I mean, I think it's pretty, you know, interesting. It's that you're seeing that there's all, you know, high work rate type individuals in there. I think LA Knight is not going to win. I think it's almost too obvious at this point that we're trying to, you know, get to the point where, like, we're to be convinced that LA Knight would be the person to win the title. But here's the other thing with the Money in the Bank championship. I just do not love how it has been used in the past to be used for, like, a United States championship, an NXT championship. Because before, the jockeying was who was going to be the next competitor and next likely winner of the world champion or whatever the title was at that moment. So, you know, what I would say is whoever I think wins this match is going to go up against, you know, for the championship that Seth Rollins currently has. That's the work rate championship, period, anyway. So the winner of this match would probably be a natural fit there. And I guess until we know who the entire cast of characters is, it's going to be kind of hard to kind of predict who that person will be. But, you know, I would argue that maybe it just hasn't even, they haven't even presented themselves just yet. But Yeah, I don't think it's LA Knight. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be something as simple as, look, I mean, those types of guys, I think, can be exciting in these types of matches. I mean, like Ricochet, like this is his match. Like this is the, you know, if Ricochet is going to be in a big time match in WWE these days, it's going to be something like this. And so I think, you know, that could also just be a play here that it's like, okay, we know this person's going to be going for the work rate title. Like nobody, I don't think, is reasonably going to be placed opposite Roman Reigns, you know, with a briefcase cash in, unless it's, you know, like a Cody Rhodes calling a shot, but there's no indication that he's even going to be in the match. And so, you know, you gotta, yeah, you have to put work rate guys in it. Cause that's kind of what the story of the title they will be going after, I think is going to be. And I'm with you, man. Like I kind of just shake my head every time they're like, you could use it on whatever championship you want. I'm just like, like it's bigger if you just talk about it being used to get, you know, the best title that you can get. Like, I can't understand why anybody would like just openly go, you know what, I'm going to cash in on the United States champion here. I think it kind of just waters down the gimmick a bit.
Yeah, in a big way. I think of the current people who qualified, Shinsuke Nakamura will be the most likely person to win.
Yeah, and him and Rollins, that could be a good match. I mean, that could be a good little program too. Okay, second question from Azan here. What do you think we'll see Lashley and Edge back on SmackDown? Did you get the big Lashley kind of video package thing today, like the Progressive Insurance sponsored like vignette for him, or was that a local market thing?
No, yeah, I got it too. Everyone got it.
Okay. Okay, so that tells me that, you know, will be back at some point. I believe he's on SmackDown. So I don't know, but my guess is we see both of them back before SummerSlam. Any other thoughts on that one, Nick?
No, I think that's fair. Yeah, that's definitely fair. I mean, quite frankly, there's a case he made that Lashley comes back next week and gets a spot in Money in the Bank. I mean, I think that wouldn't shock
me. Yeah. No, wouldn't shock me either. Yeah, good call. Good call. And then Azan's last question here is, can Austin Theory start winning matches clean? I know he's a heel, but he needs to prove to me and the fans to get wins that he can get wins on his own. Nick?
No, he doesn't. He does not need to start getting them on his own. He doesn't need to prove you anything. He's a proper heel. He's a honky-tonk man heel. They're doubling down on that more than ever. And you're supposed to be annoyed. You're supposed to be so annoyed that you wrote a letter into a call-in post-show to tell him about it, because otherwise, what will you be saying about him? Oh, he's a nice, good wrestler with good potential for the future, but there's also so many heels blocking him from going any further. So that's the role he's playing.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I could not agree more with that. I know that, you know, I've seen Theory, like, criticism like that for Theory all over the place, and I'm sitting there going like, well, no, like, that, this is the point of the character. This is Austin Theory. I mean, this is how it goes down. And, you know, you can't have him starting to win matches clean. Because if he does that, like, the essence of the heel character and the whole gimmick is kind of just gets cold water poured all over it, because he starts backing up the pomp and circumstance and promos and whatnot behind the scenes, what he talks about. Like, the heel in him right now is not just the fact that he wins by cheating. That's part of it, but it's how he loops that cheating and those wins into everything else that he does, where he doesn't see how that's, you know, the wrong way to win matches. He doesn't see how, you know, he's essentially cheating. He's just winning, and he's talking about it from the mountaintops. And if you take that away from him, you know, I don't know what he has at this point. So I'm big on, hey, he needs to keep doing what he's doing. It may get a little old, but that is kind of the point. But if he builds up enough equity that way, the person that beats him, that it's going to matter. And I think that's, like, long-term, like, that's what's most important here. So, yeah, Azan, I can't agree with that criticism. I think it's kind of the slow build of a strong heel. Have you heard that, Nick, in your kind of circle? Like, I constantly hear, like, Austin Theory kind of criticism like that, and I'm like, no, that's the whole point.
Yeah, no, I just feel like people are overly critical of him, period. I think I think people are intimidated of people who seem obviously on scholarship. And I think people want to knock young people who are really good looking. And I think that that's just what it is. I think he's still obviously finding himself as a performer. I don't think he fully has a fleshed out character, but I think at this point, I mean, anything short of him just constantly going out there having five-star matches and, you know, I don't know. He's not going to have a compelling character until he figures himself out. So other than that, I don't know what more that people want from him.
Yeah. And look, I mean, like, look, I mean, I think people that go out there and have five-star matches, it's hard for those people that have to be true heels because the audiences these
yeah,
days
that's
love,
fair
love
too,
that
Zach.
So much.
That's a very good point. You're right about that.
It's hard. So it's like, you kind of, even if he has it in him to have bigger matches, it's like, you might want to just temper it down because people do love that. Okay, last question for you tonight, Nick. And we started to talk about it here a little bit, but the Money in the Bank field on the men's side, you're outright kind of pulling LA Knight out of it. It's not going to happen. Where are you putting your chips so far in terms of who you think could win this thing if it's not LA Knight? Because on balance, I think I look at the situation holistically and I'm like, I'm with you. Like it'd be weird for him to win that at this point because it's, you know, he's not a big enough star right now to go up against Roman Reigns, but he's turning the corner and getting strong babyface reactions. So putting him opposite and having him cash in heelishly on Seth Rollins really doesn't make sense at this point either. So it's almost like, you know, saddling him with that while on paper makes sense, you know, or could be a way to try to elevate him. Like, I think it does more harm than good on LA Knight at this point in time, just because he doesn't have a clear path. But that being said, I don't know where I'm putting my chips at this point. How about you?
I think they've just been too overt with him in some of the social media advertisements, having him out there doing the commentary today, which, by the way, I didn't think he was very good at. I think he flubbed too many lines, and he wasn't setting the world on fire for me as a promo. So, I think he is a character performer who's going to have, you know, quite a few years of enjoyable TV screen time. I'm in for, at this rate, who's in the match, Nakamura being the best pick. I mean, I think, you know, Butch has no shot. Santos Escobar has, you know, had a good match, but I definitely not, you know, the person I don't think has shown anything to be elevated to the world championship title level. Who else do we have out there? Ricochet. I mean, much higher than he is at this point in his career, but he should be much higher than he is. So there's that. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked necessarily if Ricochet won, then we had a real showcase Ricochet versus Rollins match. I mean, that would be really exciting. But I'm at Nakamura. I think Nakamura is probably the one that Triple H views as like the one that got away and the one who, you know, is either now or never to give the world title to. And that's what I think is going to happen if the field doesn't grow with anyone, you know, out of left field.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I think you could definitely make a case for that, and I think it would make sense that it has some potential from like a weekly, you know, entertainment perspective to make sense. I don't, you know, I think Damian Priest and Riddle are wrestling on Monday night, so one of the two of them are going to get in. I don't know that change either one of them changes my. I guess if Riddle makes it in, he'd be somebody
Riddle,
to watch.
Yeah, Riddle would be the one to watch. Damian Priest, I feel like we just did that, and
right,
but I think Riddle. Yeah, and Riddle's almost like too obvious, right? Because he is the one who's already at a higher plane than all those others. But he's already at a higher plane than everybody else, so why not? So
right.
There's kind of like the good news is the bad news.
Yeah. But he also has this stuff going on with Gunther, too, where it's like, okay, you know, they've foreshadowed that match happening. So,
sure.
You know, it could be a situation there. But all right, man. Well, look, I think we covered the whole show here. Anything else in your notes that you want to bring up that we haven't gotten to?
Nope. I think we hit it all.
Awesome. Well, Nick, you do some incredible work and some incredible audio for the Torch on a regular basis. Tell everybody how they can follow you on social media and about your show every single week.
Well, Zach, I hope I wasn't too rough on you today. But, you know, it wouldn't be a Nick Barbati visit if I didn't come in guns blazing, you know, defending my arguments to the end. You can hear me on Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure on the PW Torch Daily Cast. Every Saturday, it is posted on there with myself and Mr. Tom Colihue, where we break down the news and happenings in WWE for that week. We actually already recorded this week's episode, which is an entire, anthology of the Bloodline storyline, bringing us to where we are now. And I think, which is interesting because, I don't know if you know this, Zach, I started doing audio for the Torch the week that Roman turned heel. And then Tom and I started our show the following January. So it was like the I think was that Roman versus Kevin Owens with the handcuff fiasco match, I think.
So we've been
together through the almost the entire duration doing audio of the Bloodline. So in many ways this is kind of our hill to die on. So it's a great look back on it and really evaluating where this storyline fits in the scheme of the all-time greats, but also where does it go and does it go anywhere? People are looking for an end for a storyline that I argue has no end. And we're going to be talking about the Bloodline till we all are no longer watching wrestling because it is, quite frankly, just in our blood.
Yeah, well said, man. If you guys haven't listened to the show, listen to the show. It's entertaining, but there's also incredibly well thought out wrestling analysis that happens on it too. So check it out, PW Torch Daily Cast on Saturdays. Once again, Wade's going to be on the PW Torch VIP side of things later on tonight, running down tonight's episode of SmackDown, so you can go VIP and check that out. It's pwtorch.com/goVIP. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, and you can check out my work at pwtorch.com all week long and on the YouTube channel, which if you haven't subscribed to that yet, please do. Just search PW Torch on YouTube. We are live most days of the week. We've got a brand new interview up with Impact World Champion Steve Macklin, and so you can check that out, as well as our regular kind of flagship show on YouTube, the PW Torch Fireside Chat with myself and Tyler Sage, just talking about all things wrestling. We hit all companies, New Japan, AEW, WWE, of course, and that is on Friday afternoons live on YouTube. So if you haven't subscribed, please do so. I think you'll be happy that you did. And turn on the notifications so that you know when we are live. You can follow the PW Torch brand on Twitter, at PW Torch, and you can follow me on Twitter, at Z Haydorn Torch. Nick, man, it's always a pleasure. I love the back and forth. I love the debates, man. And, it can't go 18 months before we do it again next time.
All right. We'll go 19. Thanks, Zach. Appreciate you.
All right, man. Thanks to Nick. Thanks to the emailers. Thanks to the callers. Appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys next time.